line and doing all that self-service, that has implications for the people who were formerly salespeople and clerks in the retail industry.
So salespeople, clerks, routine, toting up of numbers. For
exactly.
You got another category?
Yeah, the second group is superstars versus everyone else. More and more markets are becoming winner-take-all markets. Think of Larry Page and Sergey Brin when they developed that wonderful algorithm for Google. They didn't just use it for them and their friends. They put it on a global internet, and hundreds of millions of people benefited from it.
So they're gazillionaires.
So they're gazillionaires, and there are a lot of other software entrepreneurs who have made a lot of money by creating innovations that are now global. And it's in media and entertainment.
They'll make a lot of money, but they are also consolidating labor. It takes fewer people. It's not spread all over the world searches in libraries, let's say.
When someone makes tax cut software, that means there's a lot of tax preparers at H&R Block that aren't needed anymore because people can use software.
So you got five winners and 5,000 or a million losers.
It becomes
and the winners
much more
win a lot.
Yeah, the winners win a lot.
So the total pie is growing in terms of more wealth is being created, but it's not being evenly allocated. A few people are getting fabulously better off. And it's not just in software, it's also in finance and media. And we've found that it's in senior executives, CEOs of companies. A lot of this superstar effect is also kicking in.
Or they're tailgating on it. They're grabbing onto it anyway.
One way or another, they're part of
right.
it.
They're part of it. But part of it is that genuinely they're coming up with innovations that are replicated across their global enterprises, and that creates a lot of productivity and value. They get a lot of rewards for that.
So there's two categories where you've got big change, but in both of them, you're still creating wealth, but you're employing many fewer people.
Right. And the last one is capital versus labor. So we talked about Terry Gou's Foxconn factory, but in many of the other examples, what we see is literally machines replacing workers. And when you do that, the production function, the production process has more capital, less labor. People who own capital do better, and people who
they can make big profits. They're not paying a retirement and all that.
Exactly.
They just junk the machine when they're done with it.
And people who own labor do worse off. So we've seen that the share of income going to labor in the United States is at an all-time low. The share of profits and the share of income going to capital is at an all-time high.
So who keeps their jobs here? You know, lawn boys, bus boys,
as you said at the start,
physical
plumbers.
Therapy, masseuse, plumber.
Yep. If you work in the physical world and you do problem solving, so plumbers, home health aides, restaurant busboys. The problem is most of the jobs I just listed are relatively low-skill, low-wage jobs. But they are safe from this digital encroachment.
Okay, safe. But so they've got jobs that are not making much money, and millions of others have no jobs at all. So it raises the issue. If you don't have enough jobs out there, how do you move the money around so you've got an economy? You've got this story, maybe apocryphal, but the story of Henry Ford walking through a factory with this was the UAW president at the time, Walter Reuther. And Ford jokingly jabs at Reuther, says, "Walter, how are you going to get these robots," he's looking around at the automation, Henry Ford II, "to pay UAW dues?" And you write, not missing a beat, Reuther responded, "Henry, how are you going to get them to buy your cars?"
Right.
I mean, how does the society work when machines are doing all this work?
Right.
We don't have enough paychecks going home. What keeps the blood, the money circulating?
You're right to be worried, but I also want to remind you about what we said earlier, that this has happened before with other technologies. It hasn't happened as rapidly and as pervasively. But ultimately, what we need to do is find new kinds of industry, new kinds of jobs for people to work in. And Andy and I are having a hard time thinking of what all those industries may be, but that's a job for entrepreneurs. We want to crowdsource that question to people who can identify new ways to combine technology and skills to create value.
We have an existential problem for the society, and we're going to crowdsource an answer.
But that's exactly right. When Eric says we need to find a solution, he doesn't mean he and I. He doesn't mean those of us sitting around fancy institutions.
Yeah.
He means let's crowdsource that. The way we do that in a capitalist society is by opening up the doors to entrepreneurship.
That's the way it's always been done.
No, absolutely. But it's not happening fast enough right now, and you're presenting a pretty imposing challenge about the speed of adaptation.
It's not happening fast enough. There has actually never been a worse time to be a worker with no special skills, but there's never been a better time to be a talented entrepreneur. Right now, there's enormous sets of opportunities. Millions are being made, fortunes are being made, but we actually think that that has to accelerate even further to keep up with the accelerating pace of technology.
What's that chant I hear outside? We are the 99%. Let's hear from our listeners. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Noah, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for having me, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the important thing to remember here is values. about values. So right now, all this high-skilled, high-paid labor, we value that. There's a reason we value that. And when you have automation come in and take care of that, and it becomes very cheap, well, our value of that is going to drop. But people have a good way, societies have a good way of self-differentiating. Even when they seem homogeneous, they find ways to differentiate within themselves, even artificially placing values on new things to create the differentiation. So if you look at the really long term,
yeah,
and you get past the short term of who's going to lose what job or who has it, you may find that we go through all the tasks and all the jobs and we revalue them. And so suddenly, the actor on the stage, the social worker, the interpersonal, the artistic person, they suddenly get a much higher value in society and therefore higher pay.
No, I think you're onto something really profound there. I think it may take just that kind of reordering of priorities and values, as you say. Let us hold that thought for just a second. Maybe it will be that we start paying storytellers like crazy because they've got that unique human capacity. Well, hang on, let me get one more call right here. Mark in Providence, Rhode Island. Mark, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Nice segue, because I am a storyteller. My job is, my name is Mark Binder, and I write and tell stories. I go to schools and libraries and theaters, and I interact with people. And a few years ago, I was looking at what do I do that isn't offered. And one thing that I do is I transmit joy. And my experience has been that you can't get that from any machine. You can't get that from any digital interaction.
So you're made in the shade, Mark. No machine's going to replace you.
Well, that would be lovely to think. However, my fiance's iPhone 4S, if you say, Siri, tell me a story, it does.
Oh, no. Is it joyful?
Fortunately, the story it tells is pretty lame.
Yeah.
And I really wish it would, like, refer it to my iTunes page, and you could listen to one of my stories there.
Well, lame for now, but, you know, it gets better. I mean, it gets more subtle, too, I suppose, your iPhone storyteller app.
Yep.
I suppose if we really get into the Steven Spielberg level of digital, intelligence, then it would be possible for this thing to come up with a story that that person wants to hear at that time. Currently, that's a human function.
Mark, we've got it. Your line's breaking up on us a bit here, but we hear it. And you may have a joyful and unique talent, and we hope that you do. But if that iPhone 4S or 42S down the road gets more subtle, you may have a bullseye on your back, too. What do you say, Andrew?
To Mark's point, auto-generated content right now is usually terrible, either
like
incomprehensible.
Computer-generated songs or
a song
stories
or a novel or junk. A story, just junk. But we're starting to see some encroachment there as well. There are a couple different companies that are building software that automatically writes summaries of sporting events.
But what about our caller Noah's point? Maybe we will come to reprioritize so that we put a fantastic value on something that's really, this is happening already, something that's really tangibly handmade, where you can see the actual human quality of some product. Maybe it will all be basket weavers, but we want irregularly woven baskets that computers can't. I don't know.
No, I think he's onto something. Noah is onto something. And I'm with him up until his very last sentence when he said these people would be fabulously well paid. I think that we have to remember that there are a lot of sources of value other than money. And I'm an economist, but if you look at Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs, people get a lot of value from creating Wikipedia entries, blogs, telling stories, working with kids. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And if we have a society where...
If they're paid.
Well, if we have a society where robots can produce a lot of the food, clothing...